Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Yud Dalet Amud Bet. That's 14b. We're right in the middle of the page. We are 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20 lines down, right in the middle of the line. Kind of just one line down across from the Tosfot that begins Nimtzeit. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. What we've been talking about, what we just finished in our previous recording, was the clash between the public obligation to celebrate, that is, on the holiday, it says, V'samachta b'chagecha, you shall celebrate on your holidays, and a private concern of mourning. You're in Avel. 3 days ago, your father passed away, and you are in your private mourning. So we say that when your private mourning comes up against the public festival, but the public festival ends your mourning. So the holiday like Pesach would truncate your Shiva period. It would cut it off after 3 days or however many days. It would cut it off, and you would not be a mourner. On the festival, you would have to celebrate the festival just like any other normal person, even though you were a mourner. So the question is this true in the other similar cases we have? So we have two cases that are similar to a mourner. One is the menuda, the one who is excommunicated by Beit Din, and many of the things that an excommunicate has to do are similar to a mourner. They don't cut their hair, and they have to be by themselves, and they don't launder their clothing and other things like that. And also the metzora, who is kicked out of the camp and doesn't shave his hair and doesn't launder his clothing, etc., etc. Both the excommunicate and the metzora are in many ways similar to a mourner. The question is, are they the same? So that's the question. Menuda, an excommunicate, mahu sheyinhog niduyav beregel. What is the law? Does he observe his excommunication during the holiday or not? Amar Rav Yosef. So we're going to give an answer to this. Tosos asks, even before we get to there, the answer should obviously be no. Because just like we established a principle that the positive commandment of the public to celebrate overwhelms the private commandment of the individual to mourn, the same thing ought to be true of the public commandment to celebrate over the private commandment to be excommunicated and the private commandment to act as a mitzvah. Those are also all individual private obligations, and they should be overwhelmed by the public obligation. So Tosfos gives one answer, which I think is interesting, which is that part of the reason that a Beit Din excommunicates a person is for the public good, either in cases where a person has failed to observe the court's decree. So the court said you owe this person $100 and they didn't pay the $100 back. So now the court can excommunicate them to show that a person who doesn't follow the law will be excommunicated. Or a person who states heretical viewpoints and has to be excommunicated is to show that there are consequences to these actions that undermine the public good. So in many ways, this excommunication is not just a private commandment. It actually is a public commandment as well. The same thing might be true of Mitzora. Tosos doesn't say it, but a Mitzora also is a punishment for a certain kind of a sin. It's not just a biological disease that it happens to someone. It happens to someone because they've done something wrong. And so the Mitzora is a public example. So in these cases, perhaps we could say that they're not simply private obligations to observe this way, but that they all are also public obligations. And in that regard, we would need another source to determine whether or not they are observed during the holiday. And not only that, but they might not be the same. As we'll see, Abaye holds that a excommunicate does not observe his excommunication during the holiday, but he does think that a mitzora should. Okay, so Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is going to make the argument that a person does observe their excommunication during the holiday. Tashma, come and learn. Danin dine nefashot v'dine makot v'dine mamanot. On Chol HaMoed, a court can convene to adjudicate dine nefashot, that is capital cases, cases of life and death, v'dine makot, in cases of lashes, whether or not a person gets whipped or not, v'dine mamonos, and financial cases as well. So you can, the courts can adjudicate all of these on Chol HaMoed. V'ilo tzayet dina, and if a person is given a certain verdict, and they do not follow the verdict, they refuse, Mishamtinanlay, then the next thing that the court will do is excommunicate them. Now, my question on this, and I didn't see it asked anywhere, is that presumably you give a person a certain amount of time to observe it. Maybe you give them a week to repay the money, or certain you have to do it right now before you excommunicate them. And if that were to happen, then maybe it would wait until after the holiday. But if the expectation is that they would observe the verdict right now, if they don't do it or if they refuse to do it, the court can excommunicate them. The isal kadatach, and if you might have thought, eino noheg niduyav baregel, that a person does not observe their excommunication on the holiday. You might have that opinion, but think about it for a second. Mishumat ve'ati me'ikara, if a person who is already excommunicated before the holiday comes, ati regel dachile, and then the holiday comes and pushes it off, so he doesn't observe his excommunication during the holiday, that's your theory. Hashda, now, mishamtina le'anan, could you argue that we could impose a new excommunication on him? Meaning, if you're going to argue that we can excommunicate him on the holiday, then of course if he was excommunicated before the holiday, his excommunication could continue to be enforced. That is the argument. So if the court can excommunicate him on the holiday, then a person who was excommunicated before the holiday would remain an excommunicate and would observe those restrictions even on the holiday. Amar le Abayi. Abayi is going to challenge this assertion. The Dilma, perhaps, le ayune bidine, perhaps when it says that the court can convene to adjudicate these cases, it doesn't mean that they actually reach a verdict. Perhaps what it means is the court can do its work. They can listen to witnesses, they can think about the evidence, they can write up their report, they can do all the things that they need to do prior to a verdict, but the verdict itself does not happen on Chol HaMoed. De'i lo te'mahachi, because if you were not to say this way, if you say they're actually adjudicating, dine nefashot, capital cases, cases of life and death, de katani, that we're learning in the Mishnah, hachinami de katlinanlei, then you would have to argue that they could also carry out the verdict. Meaning, if they can carry out the verdict that this person owes somebody $100 and he refuses to pay the money, so you excommunicate him. So in a similar vein, if they reach a verdict that a person is liable for murder and that he has to be killed by the court, then they would have to kill him on Chol HaMoed. They would have to carry out the verdict. V'ha kamimane misimchas yom tov, and if they do that, and this might be a little counterintuitive, but he's going to argue if they're going to kill the person on Chol HaMoed, they're going to have to reduce the simcha of yom tov. Now here they do not mean for the person who's being killed. That person deserves their sentence. What he means is the judges themselves will be unable to celebrate the holiday because they're involved in the serious business of carrying out a verdict where they have to take a human life. D'tanya, as we learn in a braita, Rabbi Akiva Omer, minayin l'Sanhedrin, from where do we know that the Sanhedrin, the high court, shehargu et hanefesh, who have reached a verdict that a person has to be killed, she'ein tomin kol oto hayom, that they are not allowed to eat or drink anything that whole day. In other words, on the day that they carry out a verdict of a death sentence, they are not allowed to eat, they must fast to recognize the severity of what they're doing. Talmud Lomar, we learn this from a pasuk, lo tochlu al adam, you don't eat on the blood. Now, that means something else in its pshat in the Torah. But here what we're saying is since you are taking the blood of an individual, you're killing them, you can't eat during that whole day. Ella, rather, la'ayune bedine. So if that's the case, then they would be fasting on the holiday, which they're not allowed to do. So therefore, it must not mean that they are carrying out the verdict or giving the verdict and carrying it out, but only doing the preparatory work. They are looking into the case. They are considering the options. That they can do. The case can continue. They just can't reach the verdict. Hachinami, here too, in the case of the menuda la'ayune bedine. We're only talking about considering the case, not reaching a verdict. Now, if you can't reach a verdict, then you cannot put the person into excommunication, because the only way you can excommunicate him is if you reach a verdict and he refuses to observe the verdict, then you excommunicate him. But if la'ayune bedine is all you're doing, you're just considering the facts of the case, then it does not apply. So therefore, Abaye has shown that you cannot prove that a menuda would observe his excommunication during the holiday. And Abaye would argue, since you can't prove it, that's a proof that an excommunicate does not observe it during the holiday. However, we're not done. Amar le, so they said back to Abaye, Imkain, if that's the case, Nimtzeit ma'anez dino, well then you're delaying his judgment. In other words, here you're gathering to adjudicate the case, but you're saying that you can't finish the case on Chol HaMoed, so then it's going to be the second day of the last day of Yontif, you're going to have to wait until after Yontif to hand down the verdict, and that is an unfair delay of justice. And it says in the Torah, lo tanus hadin, that you cannot delay judgment. Tosfos asks a good question related to this, which is usually delay of judgment means between the verdict and the execution of the verdict. And here, they're not reaching the verdict. They can take as much time as they want to consider the case. So Tosfos argues here, though, that when you consider the case during Chol HaMoed and then you have to take a break for Yontif, your thought process gets derailed, and it's not fair to the person or to the judges, because then when they have to come back to the case after Yontif, their thought process may have changed, they might approach the case differently, and it's not fair. It's almost like a double jeopardy sort of situation. So that's the question. You're delaying his judgment unnecessarily. Perhaps there's another solution. Atu, so you said they can't eat the whole day, and if they can't eat, they can't celebrate Yontif. But let's say they do it this way. Atu mitzafra, they come in the morning. Uma'ayne bedine, they consider the facts of the case. Va'ayli, and then, you know, they do that all morning, and then they go up. Va'achli v'shatu, and they can eat and drink. Kula yoma, the whole day they can eat and drink. There's a whole deal in here about whether or not they can only drink water or drink wine, because they're going to be judging, but we'll not get into that now. Vahadar atu bishkia rachama, and then at the end of the day, at shkia, at sunset, they'll come back, vigamru ladine, and they will conclude the judgment and give the verdict. Vakatle, and then they can kill him. So there, in this case, you've satisfied all the conditions. You are carrying out the verdict and the decree on Chol HaMoed, but because you didn't do that until the very end of the day, you're allowed to eat and drink the whole day. Now, I don't know how that gets around the pasuk. If the pasuk says lo tochlu al adam, and it means on a day when you hand down the verdict, you can't eat and drink, who says they could eat and drink before the verdict? So they're arguing that the interpretation of this means only once you've handed down the verdict, you can't eat and drink. But then, in this case, you could always do it that way, and you would subvert the judgment completely. That question, we'll leave that for another time. So we're back to, we conclude in the end that it seems like someone who is a menuda, who is excommunicated, would observe their excommunication during the holiday. So Abaye tries one more time. Omar Abaye, Tashma, but come and learn. We learned in our Mishnah, Umenuda shehitiru lo chachamim, that one of the people who is allowed to cut their hair on Chol HaMoed is a menuda. So the menuda was permitted by the rabbis to cut their hair, an excommunicate. So if that's the case, then it seems like excommunicates don't have to follow the laws of their excommunication during the holiday. That's what Abaye is trying to argue. However, Abaye's reading of the Mishnah is very strange, as Rava says. Amar Rava. Rava says, Mikatani shehiti ruhu chachamim. Who said that the sages permitted all excommunicates to cut their hair on Chol HaMoed? That's not the case. What it is, shehitiru lo chachamim katani. It is a specific case where the sages permitted him to cut his hair. Why did they permit him to cut his hair? The azal upaise lebal dine. He went and satisfied or appeased his co-litigant. Va'ati kami darabanan, and then he came before the rabbis, v'sharulei, and they permitted him. In other words, if this person was excommunicated because he owed $100 to his friend, and the court levied a judgment that he owed the money, and he refused to pay the money, then the court puts him in excommunicates him because he's refused to carry out his sentence of paying the $100. So then it happens to be that he over Yontif, he changes his mind. He decides that he really is going to observe the court's decree. And on Chol HaMoed, he goes and he gives $100 to his friend and he makes peace with him. And then he goes to the court and he says, I paid back the money, I followed the court's verdict, and I made peace with my friend. And so then they take him out of excommunication. In that situation, he can cut his hair and he can come out of excommunication because he has appeased his friend. But it's not that every excommunicate can do it. Only the ones that specifically get a psak on Chol HaMoed that their excommunication is over, those people don't have to observe it on the holiday, but everyone else would have to. That seems to be the conclusion, that a menuda, as opposed to an avel, does continue to be excommunicated on the holiday. Now we ask the follow-up question, Mitzora, what about a person who has the disease of Tzarat? Mahu sheyinho Tzarato baragel, does he observe his requirements on the regel, that is to go out of the camp, not to cut his hair, not to greet people, although specifically Rashi mentions specifically coming into the camp. A metzora is usually supposed to be chutz la'machane, and shaving. He doesn't mention all of the other requirements. So at least those two we know, that he has to stay outside the camp and not cut his hair. Amar Abayi. So Abayi said, Tashma, come and learn. Ve'hanazir ve'hametzora ha'ola mitumato l'tarato. He's quoting the Mishnah. The people that can cut the hair include a nazir who is going from his tuma to his tara. Ha bimei tumato nahig. So I can derive from this that it only applies to someone who is in their process of purification who can cut the hair. But if he is a nazir and he is bimei tumato, sorry, not a nazir, if he is a mitzora, while he is tamei, he would have to continue to observe his status as a mitzora. So in this case, Abayi was trying to argue above by the menuda that he should not have to observe his excommunication, but here Abayi argues that he would have to continue to observe his tzara status. So Gemara answers, lo mi baya kamar. No, let's use the example of it is not necessary to say here, and then explain how it works. Lo mi baya bimei tumato. So it's not necessary to say that during the period of his tuma delo nahig, that he doesn't observe it, aval l'taharato, but I might think that during his purification, he does need it, nigzor, we would make a rabbinic decree, shema yishe karbonotav, that perhaps he might delay his karbonot. In other words, there's quite an involved process of going from becoming a mitzora to not becoming a mitzora. To come out of the mitzora takes a few days, and you have to do things on different days. You have to shave on one day and then go to the mikvah, and then the next day you bring a karbon. So Chol HaMoed isn't always so long. So a person who is coming out of his mitzora status, and he very much wants to come out of his mitzora status so he can go home, right? So he might end up with a time crunch, and it might end up that he's able to get done his haircutting and his immersion in the mikvah and all the other things he has to do, but he has to wait an extra day in order to bring his karbon, and he'll be stuck, that he'll run out of time on Chol HaMoed, and then he'll want to bring his karbon on Yantif so that he can fulfill his final obligation is to bring his karbon. So he'll end up bringing the karbon on Yantif, and he's not allowed to bring the karbon on Yantif, so it could be that because of this time crunch, the rabbis would enact a decree that a person cannot come out of their tzara'as on Chol HaMoed. Kamashmala comes to teach you that we are not concerned about that, and we do allow him to come out of his tzara'as on Yantif. However, it would still be true that during the holiday itself, he doesn't have to observe his tzara status. So Rava is going to take the other point of view, that a mitzora does have to observe his tzara status. Amar Rava, Rava says, Tashma, come and learn. V'hatzarua. In the Parsha of Tzaras, in chapter 13 of Vayikra, it uses the word v'hatzarua, and the tzarua. And we darshan, based on that extra vav and hey, L'rabot Kohen Gadol, that this includes the Kohen Gadol, meaning even a Kohen Gadol who gets a certain discoloration on his skin can be judged to have tzaras and can be a mitzora. The ha Kohen Gadol, but a Kohen Gadol, d'chol hashana k'regel. Now here we make an interesting observation about a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol lives his life as if it's a festival all the time. He's in a very special and rarefied existence. The rest of us, most of the time, we live in a mundane reality. And then we sometimes go up into a special festival reality. But a high priest, he lives all the time as if it's Chol HaMoed. That's his rule. So since the high priest is always in a situation of the festival, so we say it like this: V'ha Kohen Gadol, dechol hashana keregel, lekule alma dame. He is compared to the rest of the world. In other words, the way the Kohen Gadol acts in a normal way is comparable to the way that ordinary people would act during the festival. Ditnan, as we learn in the Mishnah, Kohen Gadol makriv onen. A Kohen Gadol can bring a sacrifice even when he's an onen, meaning even when someone in his family has passed away. Ve'enu ochel, but he doesn't eat it. And this is learned from the story of Aaron, who after Nadav and Avihu died on the festival, he brought the karbon, but he didn't eat it. Shma mina, so come and learn from this, noheg tzarato baregel shma mina. Learn from this that a mitzora is operable. You do continue to act like a mitzora even in the regel shma mina, because if it were not true, then a Kohen Gadol could never become a Metzora, because since he always lives in a status of the festival, he would be unable to become a Metzora if it was forbidden on the festival. The fact that a Kohen Gadol can become a Metzora means that an ordinary person on the festival can also be a Metzora, and therefore would have to continue to observe their Tzara status even on Chol HaMoed. That's how they learn it. And this is discussed related to the laws of Avelut as well, if we can compare the Kohen Gadol to a regular mourner. But that's not for now. Okay, continuing on just a little bit more. Avel asur b'tisporet. We know that a mourner is forbidden to cut their hair. Miduka amar luhu rachamana livnei Aaron, because of what the Torah said to the children of Aaron. Rashechem al tifra'u, your hair you shall not cut. You shall not let it grow wild, gadol pera. Michlal, from this we can derive, dekule alma asur, that the rest of the world is forbidden. Meaning, just so we learned that the Torah tells Kohanim, who have a different status, have a more rarefied just status, like we learned that the Kohen Gadol is as if he's always in a festival status. So too, and the Kohanim have a different obligation. They're not allowed to become tamei to their relatives when they die. So specifically, the Torah says, you cannot grow your hair. Now, if they are the exception to the rule that only the Kohanim, when they're mourners, can't cut their hair, we can derive from that everybody else who's not a Kohen is not allowed to cut their hair. And that is the source in the Torah that an Avel is not allowed to cut their hair. And there's a question of whether or not that is a requirement to Oraita or Drabanan, which goes back to the question, is from the Torah or from the rabbis. It goes back to the same question as to whether or not Avelut in general is from the Torah or from the rabbis. If you would assume that Avilut is from the rabbis, then this would also be a rabbinic injunction. And if it is from the Torah, it's possible that it could be a Torah requirement. The way we paskin related to haircutting is that it applies for the 30 days, and some people argue that that is from the Torah. And then even after 30 days, Adshi Igarbo, until his friends tell him that he looks like a mess, that's when he's allowed to cut his hair. Okay, top of Tetvav Amud Aleph, 15a. We're just going to do a few more lines. Minudin u'metzora'in ma'hein b'tespora. What about the excommunicate and the metzora? So we've been talking about these four categories of people that go together, or four situations. The three categories of people are an avel, a mourner, a menuda, an excommunicate, and a metzora, a person with the disease of tzarat. And then we add into that chol hamoed, which in many ways mimics the same kinds of obligations, because the rabbis didn't want you to do those things that you could have done before the festival. So if we know that an avel is forbidden to cut their hair, what about an excommunicate and a metzora? It's a little bit of a strange question, only because it's clear in the Torah that a Metzora is not allowed to cut their hair, but the Gemara is trying to get at a specific proof. Tashma, so come and learn. Menudin u'metzora'in asur l'saperu l'chabes. An excommunicate and a Metzora are forbidden to cut their hair and to do laundry. And menuda shemet, a excommunicate who dies while they are still in the status of while they are still excommunicated, Beitin Soklin et Arono, the Beitin stones their coffin. What does this mean? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Lo she'amidu alav gal avanim kegalo shalachan. It doesn't mean that they put a pile of stones on his coffin like the pile of stones that they put on Achan's coffin. Rather, the Beitin sends and puts one large stone on his coffin. L'lamedcha, to teach you, shekol hamit nadeh umeit benidu yav, that anyone who becomes excommunicated and dies while they are still in that status, Beitin soklin et aronu, that the Beitin stones their coffin. Now, the story of Achan is a story of a guy who was excommunicated. After the Jewish people under Yoshua conquered Jericho, they were told that they were not allowed to take any of the spoils. And Achan, violating the law of Joshua and completely against, showing contempt for Hashem's law, goes and takes spoils from Jericho, and he's punished for that. So they excommunicated him. And then when he died, while he was still excommunicated, when he was buried, they put a pile of stones on his coffin, which is a way of showing contempt. It's like an additional punishment. It's that, usually stoning is one of the ways in which you could kill a person if they are being punished in a capital way by a court. And here, to show that he was a contemptible person, or to show that he never received atonement for his excommunication because he didn't serve the whole term, they put a pile of stones on his coffin. So a person who is excommunicated has similarly been shown contempt by the community, whether it's because they failed to honor the court's verdict, or because they did something which is completely out of keeping, either it was heretical or crossed some kind of a red line, and so the community had to put them in cherem. They would also stone the coffin, but they would stone it in, let's say, a less extreme way. They don't want to say that he's like Acham, but they put a stone on his coffin in order to show that he never completed his excommunication status. There is some discussion among the poskim as to whether or not this applies to all excommunicates or only those who, were espoused heretical views in public or something like that, but not to simple people who just didn't observe the court's decree. Perhaps we wouldn't put it on them. There's also discussion about if there are different levels of excommunication. It seems that there are different levels of excommunication, nidui, shamta, cherem, and whether or not the Torah here is, or whether or not the halacha applies to the less severe kinds of excommunication or only to the most severe kind of excommunication. But a person, you know, we don't do much excommunication these days. We don't do it at all. The most that we would do is have a beit din send out a siruv to say that a person refused to appear before the court, and then you're not supposed to count them for a minyan. But, you know, excommunicating someone is not a simple business. It's a very severe punishment. And the severity of that punishment is underscored by the fact that even if they die while they're under that punishment, we make some kind of a heker, some kind of a zecher, that they were excommunicated when they passed away by putting a stone on their coffin. All right, we'll stop there on Tetvam Amud Aleph and continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.